Radio 560 KPQ.
This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Bill 15 at News Radio 560 KPQ. Michael Knight, your humble host. My very special guest is Kyle Mott. And I'm going to dispense with the usual snarky introduction that I've done, because I've done every play on words for the word judged, being judged. I lay in wait to judge someone. I've done it all. I've run the rope right to the end. It's just a frazzled mess, and I'm not going to do it again. So, Kyle, you're so lucky that I dispense with that, because you get the introduction just like this. Here is a candidate for Chelan County's District Court, Kyle Mott, coming to KPQ.
That one works. Thanks, Michael.
That does. It's a little more straightforward than I'm used to. And I do apologize for people who wanted it to be more convoluted, but I really have run... all the judges are coming in at once, and I've run the play on words, too, that's to its natural end.
You don't want to have to repeat yourself on those.
Let's go back to the beginning. How did you get in this race?
I filed, I think it was the last day of February, against Nancy Harmon, a sitting judge right now, and... It's been a long haul to get to this point, but we're only a month away now from the election.
41 days, right, to election time?
41 days, that's right. That's right.
And any regrets that you took this step?
No regrets at all. If anything, I've been, my ambitions and thoughts for this have been confirmed the more we've gone along. It's been more work than I could have ever imagined.
Everything always is, isn't it?
It always is. It always is. I mean, I knew it would be a lot of work. But I don't think you have an appreciation for the little things that come up daily that you have to tend to in something.
Because every
like this.
Idea you have, if you want to put into action, it's just you and your family and your closest workers, right?
That's right. That's right. And it's a more or less a grassroots effort for my campaign. Not a whole lot of money to spend on it, but I've had great people that have donated to the campaign, so it's helped out. But other than that, it's a lot of friends, family putting in the sweat labor on this.
Am I right to imagine that this is going to be a busy midterm election? Have you gotten reaction that this is sort of the quickening is upon us, that a lot of people are getting ready to vote?
I think so. There's a good turnout in the primaries. But now with the midterms now and Washington now not requiring voters to pay for their ballots to be put in the mail, I think there'll be a big turnout for these midterms.
I hope so. I'm hoping for it. I want 45%. How would that be?
I think that's a respectable guess on what we could get. Of course, we would want more than that. But
of course, that means that less than half of us care enough about our democracy to actually participate.
That is the sad reality.
That's worse than sad. That's grim.
Yeah. When 45% is an ambitious number to shoot for, it's kind of disappointing.
What have you learned about campaigning, this being your first? What does a campaigner have to do to get recognition?
Doorbelling has been great, actually.
Really?
Surprisingly. I more or less dreaded it at the beginning.
Of course.
It's a daunting prospect to try and reach as many voters as you can, and obviously I'm not going to be able to meet everyone. But the vast majority of people, when you feel like you're interrupting their afternoon or their evening, they've great to speak with. They've been polite, respectful, some more than others. But
what do they tell you they want? Or are they asking you questions like, did you go to law school? Do you know anything about being a judge? Have you ever been a judge before?
I've had that a few times. Almost the most common question is, are you a Republican or Democrat?
Okay.
And that's... Their first question, and it's one of the questions that I cannot answer. I can't...
But tell me why.
The Washington Judicial Code of Conduct, there are four different canons there, and they prohibit any judicial candidate from expressing essentially a preference for one party over the other or being active in a political party.
That's a good rule.
I think it is a good rule. And I understand why people want to know... the leanings of somebody, maybe in their personal voting or what have you, but I think now more than ever, at any level of court, it's important to keep those partisan politics out of it as much as possible.
Look at the mess we're in over them right now. You don't have to look very far to see how awful it can be if the judge declares himself to be one or the other.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And it, when you get to, I'm assuming you're referring to the confirmation hearings.
I have no idea what you mean.
Okay.
Don't know what you mean there, Kyle.
When you get to that level, obviously people have, those candidates or nominees have written opinions that more you can kind of discern their leanings and thoughts on how they would rule if presented with other questions. So when you get to that level, man, it's I can't imagine going through that process. I think it's extremely important to vet those candidates or any candidates whatsoever, but district court is far removed from the Supreme Court of the United States
and far removed from the doorsteps of the potential voters. When you started going door to door, when did you get your guts and say, you know what, this is not so bad, I can do this?
It actually, the first day I went out there, I was not looking forward to doing it, but by the end of it, I gained a lot of confidence, gained a lot of knowledge about how to be quick about handling the interactions at the doors. It's all about meeting as many people as you can, and some want to get in long conversations, and sometimes that's great if I have the time, but otherwise it's learning about how to move
along.
Yes.
You have to be polite and say, I got to go.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived in some bigger cities where sometimes all the judges on the ballot are men and women that I don't really know. You don't really know who they are. Not that they're Republican or Democrat, but what do they think about fairness? What are their ideas about being equal under the law? What are their ideas about guilty until proven innocent? Think, you know, basic questions like that. You don't really know. And mm-hmm. So in a situation like that, I'm less inclined to vote for a judge that I don't understand because I'm fearful of putting someone that I don't support in a position of power.
Yeah, and that's completely understandable. Going around, another common question is, who are you running against? Because there are a number of other judicial candidates that I'm sure you're having on your show.
Having them all.
So it's a fair question because people see signs, they might know names, but until they get their ballot, they don't know what court it's for, who the other candidate is. So it's doing a lot of cleaning up and clearing up of that situation.
Some people have more gifts for standing on the porch and just ringing the doorbell and introducing themselves and going into their spiel than others. But what else is the basics for campaigning for office and during an election like this? What's the basic? A website? Bumper stickers? Yard signs?
Website. I think website's super important right now. Facebook has been very cost effective, and they provide you with feedback on numbers of people reached that are outside of your general friend base. So I think that's been a very helpful tool. We have some car decals and magnets. Got a billboard up down on Wenatchee Avenue now. Yard signs. I personally hate them, but
just because they're ugly.
I feel they're ugly.
Yeah.
And the election season seemed to get longer and longer. They're a necessary evil, I feel, at this point in getting some name recognition out there. But really, it's my least favorite part of the campaign in terms of efforts to get people to put your name in their yard.
You ever think back to why you did this in the first place? What propelled you to say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to run for office? What was in your personality, your nature that made you do it?
You know, working in district court, we have Judge Harmon and Judge Four right now are our two judges. And they were both former prosecutors. I feel working in that court that some of that is reflected in how the court is ran and the outcomes of some of the case in terms of sentencing. I think having a non-prosecutorial voice up there would temper that a little bit. And I had support of some people that I really expressed a lot of faith in and trust in for them to tell me, no, it's a bad idea, or, you know, what's the worst that could come from it. And I took them up on that advice, and here we are.
You find that the defense counsel's point of view is not openly represented in district court very often?
Nothing is completely out of line or anything like that. I don't want people to get the wrong idea.
We're not railroading people in district court.
There's no railroading going on. I think the human aspect on some of these people's stories is missed sometimes, or not given as much credit in terms of what they're going through and how they may have gotten to this state. Again, these are misdemeanor crimes, gross misdemeanor crimes that I work on, not felony level things. A lot of people have some tough stories out there, and I think it's important to give that background its due, and balancing it with the severity of the crime charged.
Let's talk about what district court sees in terms of the type of crime that goes before the judge there.
I think the most serious DUIs on the driving side of things, assault fourth degree, a lot of times the domestic violence tag to it. Those are both gross misdemeanors, punishable by up to 364 days in jail, up to a $5,000 fine, along with other collateral consequences that could come with those, such as license suspensions on the DUI side, loss of rights to firearms on the assault fourth degree domestic violence side. But it gets, those are probably the biggest, more serious offenses that we see in district court. Anything above that would be seen in superior court.
When you look at the type of work that defense counsel has to do, did you ever think to yourself, someday I think I'm going to be a judge in this courtroom?
It happened a lot sooner than I would have anticipated me thinking that I would be in this position. But it was something that I appreciated. I think the job is an incredible responsibility, but it would also be very rewarding from a professional standpoint. And those are big reasons why I stepped up to throw my name in the ring on this one.
My impression is the pace of district court is rather swift. Moves right along.
It does.
A lot of paper going from one pile to the other pile, right?
Yes, it's our clerks are extremely impressive when they'll have two or three defendants lined up waiting to receive their paperwork while the judge and the attorneys are going through a fourth person. So they're balancing that, keeping an ear on for what's going on, also filling out paperwork for the cases that have just resolved. It's pretty impressive.
Moves right along.
It does.
And that's part of the nature of the courtroom, but it's also something that you have to commit yourself to. Let's move it, right? Let's be fair. Let's have it all said, but let's move along.
Right. And from a defense side, an aspect of client management comes into play there, because not a lot of them, but sometimes they want to speak their mind on things, have things explained that I could explain myself, not in front of the courtroom, while there's 60 cases waiting to be called after that. So it's important to keep things moving right along and know what needs to be done on the record in front of the court, but also if things can be best done on an attorney-client basis to save that for after the hearing.
I'm not sure what day it was. It was a sunny weekend a couple weeks ago. I don't know if I saw you, but people wearing Kyle Mott's T-shirts were working the corners over there by what bank is it? Chase Bank. And they were in that neighborhood. I assume that was you and your loved ones.
Yes. My wife, cousins, friends. Again, it's the support's been phenomenal.
And your cousin said, you know, Kyle, we'll do this one, but if you got to do next one, you have to serve lunch or something, right?
We had lunch afterwards.
Okay.
We did have lunch afterwards.
Good
so,
move.
Yeah.
Then the
yeah, it helps.
Come next time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was a hot day too. So luckily any more sign waving should be a little bit cooler temperatures.
So people will wave back or honk, and that's about all you can hope for in a situation like that. Name recognition, right?
Yes. We get a few thumbs down, stuff like that. You don't know whether it's directed at me as a person or as a candidate, somebody against politics or judges in general.
Some all judges.
Right, yeah. You don't know. But, I mean, that's few and far between. A lot of straight-faced people that avoid the eye contact. A lot of waves, honks. It's just about getting the name out there.
Do issues affect judges as much as reputation and the reliance on them to do the right thing? We have to look at a judge and say, this is a person that I trust in the future to make the right decisions.
I think so, yeah. I think looking at how a person would handle cases impartially, fairly, is extremely important. And you can look at their their track record, their personality, their kind of reception among others in the community is kind of a picture of what you might get of somebody on the bench.
We're talking with Kyle Mott. He's a candidate for Chelan County District Court. When we come back, we'll
be back. Jerry's Auto Supply.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:34 at News Radio 560 KPQ. You know, usually when we get traffic tips, it's on the morning show. And every once in a while, we get a notice of Bighorn Sheep. But today, right now, at this moment on 97A, Bighorn Sheep have taken over the streets around Entiat. They're north of town. They're south of town. They're on both sides of the freeway. And you don't want to hit a Bighorn Sheep. So 97A around Entiat, north of town, south of town, and on both sides of the freeway, a number, like a lot, like more than 30 Bighorn Sheep have decided to take up residence and make their move. Don't run into one of those. 97A near Entiat. Watch, just be aware. My special guest this hour and for today's agenda is Kyle Mott. He's a candidate for the Chelan County District Court. We're discussing his candidacy and what he plans to do should he be elected. How did you get into the business of law? Why did you decide to go to law school? What was it that drew you in and said, this is right for me?
Now, it was actually something that intrigued me in going back to high school and even before then, but I didn't make the actual move to doing it until after undergrad, where I went to Gonzaga, and then I moved to San Francisco directly after graduation and worked in the financial industry for a while.
Montgomery Street.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Of course.
Actually, our place was down in San Mateo and in Woodland Hills, but definitely spent some time on Montgomery Street. But bad time to be in finance, end of
2008.
So
I can pick it.
Shortly after unloading my Honda Accord down there, went to work and got laid off.
Wow.
So I wanted to stay in San Francisco a while. I did. I got another job at a communications firm. But that wasn't a career path that I wanted to pursue. It was to pay the bills while I saw the Bay Area where I'd never had visited before or anything like that. But it was during that time that I was also trying to make that next step in my head on what I want to do. So I moved back to Wenatchee, knew I wanted to go to law school. So I studied for the LSAT and did a year of AmeriCorps with our local court-appointed special advocates program.
And you went to school at Gonzaga again?
I went to Chapman University down in Orange, California. So I drove back down to California. This time, it's in Orange County, right outside of Anaheim, and went to law school down there.
I've done that move a couple times up and down the coast. You pack it and you go down, you pack it, you go up. It's just about the same, except you have, when you pack your car and pack the truck and unpack your house, it's like you're having a flashback to the last time you did it every time I do it. So
it was,
can't remember where you're going.
But, man, that is an incredible drive, though. If anything, that was one of my favorite parts of the whole experience. I hadn't seen the Redwoods before. Got to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Drove through Napa Valley. There's some beautiful country in that.
So your first year in law school can be challenging to a lot of people.
Yes.
Well,
first
what
year,
was it like?
It's unlike studying like anything else, at least that I've experienced. It's so much more labor intensive on the study side. You go to class, you discuss cases, theories behind the decisions, stuff like that, and some black letter law. But there's a lot of work going into the study side of things, because you have to be able to glean the important parts and holdings from those cases and then be able to apply them to a completely different set of facts.
Is it factual that you have to start studying before you know what you're studying for? You start right at the beginning and keep studying, trying to catch up with what the classwork was like, and then you keep studying until you get to the finals?
That's about it. Yeah, it's all about staying above water, trying to stay swimming in the right direction. And the first test you take, it's different because of the time pressures and the issues you have to spot, how you explain your the holdings and the likely outcomes there, the conclusions. But yeah, a lot of those classes and the professors don't wait for you. You gotta stay up.
So. Especially keep the edge pretty sharp, right?
They keep the edge pretty sharp, and they're not afraid to put you on the spot, and that's all part of the experience too, is getting called on in front of your peers and having to think on your feet.
Yes.
So.
Well, was it during that time that you said, maybe I'll start out as a public defender, maybe I'll start out as a prosecutor, maybe I'll be corporate law? How did you come to know which direction to take?
Actually, I did not. I did really well in criminal law. But I didn't want to make any sort of career out of it at that time. I'm not quite sure why. I think the civil law side had more interest to me, long term, but for no good reason, because I hadn't done either one. So, I focused on the civil side of things and ended up moving back here and starting at Lacey Kane, doing a lot of PI type work, personal injury, some employment discrimination type work. And then I went to Ogden Murphy Wallace, where I wanted to explore more of the transactional side of the law. So I was able to do that there. But I think through that, I realized that the criminal law, the speed that we already discussed, the human element to it is much more interesting to me, on a case by case basis than a lot of those other type civil matters and transactions.
That law that you studied when you were, or practiced, I should say, about employee discrimination, that's a tough case to prove sometimes. Even if someone has been terribly mistreated at work, there's not a lot of evidence sometimes.
It's very true, yeah. It's hard to prove those things, and it's especially when you're dealing with at-will employees. If you're contracted, a lot of times you can look at the contract and some of the results of how your case might go are dictated by contract, but where it's someone that's just at will doing work for somebody else and issues come up, then you might have a case on your hands and it might be a difficult to prove one at that.
When you think of the job that you're hoping to earn through the votes coming up in 41 days, would you do it any differently than it's being done right now, or would you try to make an effort to streamline something, modernize something, change an attitude towards something? Is it that flexible?
There is some flexibility. I mean, you are going to be working with the same number of cases. It fluctuates, but a lot of cases that you're still going to have to find a way to get through. Right now, statewide, our biggest crime, our most frequently cited crime in district court and municipal courts, is driving while license suspended in the third degree.
Wow.
And that's a misdemeanor charge. It's almost 50% of our cases in district court.
Half the cases are driving with a suspended license?
Nearly 50%, yeah.
So someone with a suspended license is still very likely to get caught because they're such an awful driver, right?
Not necessarily. A lot of times this isn't somebody that's driving after a reckless driving conviction or a vehicular assault or a DUI. It's somebody that hasn't paid some sort of traffic ticket,
uh-huh,
and then it goes to collections, and then the DOL suspends their license. DOL has to send notice, due process requirements, send notice that their privilege to drive is being suspended unless they take care of this ticket. But a lot of people, unfortunately, don't update addresses with the DOL upon moving, and that sending of the letter is all that they need to do. They don't need to make sure that it gets to the person or that they know that they're suspended. And so you see a lot of people get picked up and they had no idea that they were suspended because, you know, maybe they didn't update their address, never got the letter. And for a lot of those people, it's comes down to a money issue on being able to pay some outstanding tickets that are in collections.
If they can't pay, they go away for a little while?
If they can't pay and it's, if the charge is pursued and they're convicted of driving suspended third, it's a up to 90 days in jail, up to $1,000 fine. And their history plays a big part in how those sentences turn out. Somebody that has made a habit of disregarding the fact that they need a license, the punishments are, of course, going to be higher.
Kind of hard to get their attention sometimes, it seems.
Right, right, absolutely. But for the people that, you know, this is a first or second occasion, there might be some explanation behind it. I think if we were to institute a relicensing program involving our court, I would love for it to involve East Wenatchee Municipal and Douglas County District, and kind of model it after successful reinstatement programs in the Seattle area and the Spokane area, where the court handles the repayments. It's not farmed out to a collection agency charging interest rates that collection agencies do, and they're able to work directly with the court to make the payments, get their license, the hold on the license released. That way they're driving with a valid license, and the court, at least the Spokane study has shown that the court is actually getting more money back to them in fines owed than through the collections process. So I think it's kind of a win-win scenario for everyone. Getting people relicensed means they're not going to be getting new charges of the same kind. They're making payments on what they owe, and the court dockets are decreased in the meantime. And decreased court dockets, in turn, mean prosecutors have more time instead of focusing all that time on those types of crimes. They're focused on the more serious ones. Same from a defense attorney standpoint, and also from law enforcement standpoint. If law enforcement's running registrations out there, and they won't see as many people with driving suspended third statuses if people are taking care of their business and getting their license reinstated. So it also allows them to focus more on more pressing matters.
That's the voice of Kyle Mott. He's the candidate for Chelan County's District Court. When we come back, we're going to find out, how many cases does the District Court see every day? Is it a crowded place? And do all these people have lawyers? Are they represented? Are they getting a fair shake? We'll get those answers right after this.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Stiefel Nicholas & Company, Incorporated. Member SIPC and NYSE.
Let's go back to when life was simple.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
12:51 is our time. The show is called The Agenda. My very special guest is Kyle Mott, candidate for Chelan County District Court. He's been a public defender in the system for quite a while. He's a local guy who's running for office. Is district court such a busy place that everyone gets good representation or some representation, or do some people get no representation?
Everybody's entitled to representation. It's a busy place. It's standard afternoon might be 70 cases or so on a county calendar that I participate in. If they can't afford an attorney, they can ask for one to be appointed. If they financially qualify, they can hire somebody, of course. And rarely do we have people opt to represent themselves, but it does happen.
You ever do they get cautioned against that? You have a fool for a client, my friend.
The judge has kind of a process that they go through to make sure that the person knows their rights that they're waiving, what they might be up against a trained prosecutor who does it on a daily basis. And but it is their right, so if they're knowingly and voluntarily waiving the right to counsel, then it's their choice to make.
So if you're seeing 300 to 400 cases a week, how many of those people just pay a fine and go about their business? How many people actually go to jail?
It's tough to tell, really. There's a lot of different ways that punishment can be worked out in district court on cases, fines, community service, electronic
home
monitoring.
I like the payment plan, if you don't mind.
The payment plan.
That's
a
good one.
Yeah, everybody likes the payment plan side of things. And then there's, of course, jail. But I think it's important to, in district court at least, to first look at the electronic home monitoring, community service side of things, and save the jail for those truly deserving of jail.
It's that time of the hour, sir, when we're just about out of time. I ask you to ask the good people of Chelan County for their vote.
Well, I ask you for your votes. I know it's been a long election season, so you're probably tired of hearing our voices and seeing our names on things. But district court now, it's had three former prosecutors in a row. I think balance is important in everything. District court is no exception to that. Being a defense attorney with civil experience, I've worked under our Superior Court judges as their senior law clerk. I've seen how the sausage is made, and I really want that job. I think I can be fair, impartial, and I'd be dedicated to making sure that the job is done well. I am young. That's something that people say when I come to their doors, but I don't think that is really an issue at all. The statement "experience matters" has been thrown around a lot this election season, and neither I don't have any judicial experience, but neither does my opponent. So I don't think age should be used as a look or some sort of qualification. It's the ability to control a courtroom, the ability to be fair, impartial, respectful, and I have those abilities, so I would ask you for your vote.
That's the voice of Kyle Mott. He is your candidate for Chelan County District Court. Kyle Mott, thanks for coming in today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Wonderful to see you again.
You too.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.